You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello and welcome to the only six-star wrestling podcast on planet Earth. This is the World Class Podcast. I am your co-host, Jordan the Body Fox, and with me, as always, my main man, my partner in crime, the Great Black Hyper Cash. Ray, what's up, man?
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Parlez-vous français? Oui, oui. Père Jacques.
Oh, man. What are you up to, man?
Nothing much, man. Just ready for the day, trying to get the day started. I wanted to give a little French because that crowd last night acted a fool. And I mean in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one of the first things that Corey Graves said, we'll talk about it. We're kind of skipping ahead, one of the first things Corey Graves said was, it's always a little bit weird here in Montreal. It's kind of like the night after WrestleMania every time we come to Montreal. And well, I thought that was kind of funny because do you feel like it's really like that? Do you feel like Montreal's like that?
Yeah, they've said that for years. King used to call Canada Bizarro Land because before the night after WrestleMania, Canada always has done the opposite of what WWE wants them to do. They always have.
I dig it.
That goes back to Shawn Michaels. They always have. They'll boo every face and they'll cheer every heel.
Yeah, I think the best known, and correct me if I'm wrong, there might be a more known scenario or time situation, but the best known one that I can think of is, I believe it was in Toronto with Hogan and Rock, and Hogan became the face, even though he was the heel in the entire buildup. Was that WrestleMania
18?
Okay.
That was a nostalgia thing. Yeah, they just were so crazy about Hulk. And remember, WrestleMania 6 was in Toronto. Hogan
Warrior
Ultimate Challenge. So, you know, there was a lot of nostalgia there.
Yeah.
But so I feel like the whole opposite thing started with Bret Hart, because you remember Bret's character got so complex. He was a heel everywhere in the world except for he was a face everywhere in the world except for America.
Gotcha.
In Canada, he was literally he was a mixture of Andre, Hogan, and Cena. Basically, in Canada,
just that, like, white meat baby face, can't do anything wrong.
Dog, he could punch Justin Trudeau in the face. And they were like, Justin probably deserved that. Like, that's what Bret Hart was. So that kind of started it. And then, you know, WWE likes to do evil things to his Canadian fans, as we've seen over the years.
Yeah. Man. Sorry, I had to get me a little drink of coffee there. It's what you got to have that coffee, man, when you record at 7:30 in the morning. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I'm not the most ardent coffee drinker, but yes, I do understand what you mean.
Yeah. You know. So anyway, this is the really early Raw review. We just talked a little bit about the crowd reaction. I think we're going to talk about that a little bit more here in just a second. Matter of fact, the first thing I have in my notes here, did you watch, I guess you watched last night, right? See, I watched in the morning time. Yeah. I watched the morning after. That's why I get up real early in the morning to watch, but how did you feel about the videos to open the show? It's the videos doing replays of the video packages doing replays of the Greatest Royal Rumble and all the matches.
I think they would have been stupid if they didn't do it. It was a big event. I mean, we don't care when they replay all the matches from any other pay-per-view.
Yeah. No. That's what I was getting at was I thought for some reason these video packages even seemed better than when they normally do them for pay-per-views.
Oh.
So
okay.
I was saying for some reason they seemed even better. I don't know. I don't have no idea why. They were on my mind this morning. So I watched them and I was like, those are really good.
I think a big part of it is the set and the scenery was so beautiful.
You know what? You're probably right. Pathetic.
Because think about it. Other than WrestleMania, every other show was the same set.
That's a good point. I bet that was it. And, you know, and then it ended with, this outside big view of the stadium with fireworks going up and stuff like that. And it really, you know, got me kind of not like pumped up like, rage, but, you know, just like regular pumped up like, all right, man, that's what's Raw, you know?
Yeah, it was pretty cool, man.
Yeah, so I really liked them. And that's why they were on my mind. I didn't put them in my notes, but I just, I was like, hey, I'm going to ask him about that this morning. So anyway, I just thought they were pretty cool. I didn't know if they stood out to you or anybody listening. So
when they want to make sets, nobody makes them better. It was just a beautiful set.
Well, nothing beats that WCW Spring Stampede, huh? You remember one?
So okay, maybe not Spring Stampede, but the shows they did in Panama Beach with the ring in the middle of a pool.
Oh,
those are pretty damn cool.
Yes, you're right.
The Spring Break episodes, those are pretty cool, I gotta admit.
Yeah, the Spring Stampede ones are actually ugly, dude. They would have like a bull rope on like 2 feet of fence and then like 3 square bells of hay. Like, and you know someone was hitting that hay. Somebody was hitting that hay.
We could do a whole show on WCW pay-per-view sets, because I love them all, no matter how ridiculous they are.
Yeah,
like the Road Wild one where they're literally around, just like at a biker rally.
Yeah, up in Sturgis, right?
Yes, Sturgis, South Dakota is where they're having a wrestling show.
Not a single ticket sold, right?
No, the only reason they had that show there every year was because Bischoff wanted a reason to go. And he had to work, so he made an excuse to just go there and do it. Because nobody sold tickets.
Yeah, I read The Death of WCW. Have you ever read that?
I have not actually, but I've heard it's really good.
Yeah, if you want to read it, I can get it to you pretty quick. I have that shirt for you anyway. That our boy Roy Turner from the Tricky Kid podcast. He has a sponsor, a Interstate Batteries sponsor that's based out of Lewisville, Texas, which is a little bit outside of Dallas. Anyway, he hooked up with a shirt for me and you and my wife and son. And so I've been meaning to get that shirt to you. And so if you want to read that book, I'll just throw that book in there with it and get it to you. But anyway, the book's really good, and that's one of the main things that it talks about. It's like, you know, when they're high on the hog, you know, no pun intended, but, you know, Hog Wild or Road Wild, whatever one it was, you know, that's fine. You know, even though you're missing out probably on, you know, anywhere from $400,000 to $800,000 at the live gate, you know, but when, you know, Ted Turner's pumping in all that money, that's the last thing they were thinking about. But what they were criticizing was after the company's losing $50 million in one calendar year, why do you go back and do that and lose another $400,000 to $800,000 again? You know what I mean? Like, it's time to change something up, you know?
One of those years, I don't know if it was the last one or one of them, they had a Travis Tritt concert after the show. So I don't know if they sold tickets for that one. Because Travis Tritt ain't just, they weren't very good, very business savvy. So maybe they did just pay Travis Tritt to come and play for free. I don't know.
did Kiss?
Yeah, but Travis Tritt was at the time a really popular, you know, country singer. So I would imagine somebody had to pay some money to see that dude. I would hope.
Right. So last thing, now that we mentioned Oh, no, that wasn't Travis Tritt. That was somebody else. Never mind. I'm such an idiot.
Uh-oh.
I was going to say, I don't remember. It was Randy Travis, I think is who it was. Anyway, yeah. I have a good friend whose dad was a politician here in Oklahoma, and he got into a bit of trouble while in office and ended up getting going to prison for a while. And while he was in prison, he went ahead and wrote down his life story and leading up to what he did to get in trouble, because he pled guilty for everything. He didn't try to hide anything, right, about some money stuff, some wrongful things he did with money while a state representative for like 12 years or whatnot. And so he just wrote it all out completely truthful and stuff. But anyway, one of the things that he wrote about was back before Randy Travis was a big deal, he had randomly seen Randy Travis perform in like Tennessee or something while him and his wife were in Nashville or something. And he wasn't all that big. So he was like, "Hey man, I want to put on a concert in my hometown, and I want you to come do it." And they're like, "Yeah, you know, just here's my booking agent. Just get with him." So he got with him and found out there was going to be $5,000 for him to have the concert. He's like, "Yeah, sure, no biggie." And so they get to the concert venue, and Randy Travis and them show up, and they're like, "Hey, do you have the $5,000?" He's like, "Oh no, I was going to cut you a check after I get everyone's money for, you know, showing up to the concert." And they're pretty much like, "Oh no, we get paid beforehand." So they put him in his RV, and my friend's dad was over there getting all the money every so often from the people coming in and buying tickets, and had to go over there and count in the RV $5,000 cash like it was a drug deal. And so he had to give them $5,000 cash while they were putting it in a briefcase. And the minute they count $5,000, Randy Travis and his booking agent or manager or whatever was like, "All right, gentlemen, you got yourself a deal." And he said they went on stage and performed the best concert he ever had. But literally, it was so funny because all these people were buying tickets and they literally had to wait till they hit the $5,000 mark. And it was, you know, half hour, you know, just a half hour before the concert was set to start is when they finally agreed to go on stage, you know?
That sounds like something that should be in a movie.
I know, right? That sounds like some mob shit or, you know, some, I don't know. It just sounded funny. It was always funny. That story was always funny. But I got to type up his book. I thought it was pretty cool. When he got out of prison, you know, he just had this, like, five notebooks, like, big notebooks, his whole life story handwritten. And he asked me, him and his son didn't know much about computers, and his son's a real good friend of mine, so they asked me to do it. So I typed up the entire book for him and fixed any misspellings or anything like that, and I gave it to him on a thumb drive. He mailed the thumb drive to a publisher, and the publisher agreed to publish his book. So he actually has a book called Beneath the Vines. And
Look at Jordan Fox, everybody. Father, publisher, podcaster, and now ghostwriter. Wow.
And anyway, yeah, and they tried to pay me after it was all said and done, after he got money for the book, and I wouldn't take it. I just asked for a personal, I asked for a free book and for him to write a personal note in there with it and signed it. And so that's what he did on the front cover. On the inside of the front cover, he wrote me a note in there and signed it.
No, you take the money.
Oh, no. Well, I know that now, damn it. I didn't know that at the time.
Oh, boy.
No, man, it was just a favor. It's not, you know.
Man, please. Did he tell you how much he was going to give you?
No.
For all you know, you could have been sitting on some stacks, bruh.
What if he would have been like, "Yeah, so if I would have said yes," and he'd be like, "Well, I just want you to have every dime that I made from the book, because the book, just getting the book published is enough for me," and he just gives me like $250,000.
But you know what?
What's up?
You'll never know.
Yeah.
This could be a whole different conversation right now.
Could be. I think I'm going to put Ghostwriter in my Twitter feed bio, or my Twitter bio. What do you think?
Man, just start making up stuff. Philanthropist.
I did give a dollar to the DAV, you know.
There you go. There you go. Do it.
All right, man. How about we pay the bills real quick and we'll get started with our really early Raw review. How's that sound?
Let's do it. A lot to talk about.
All right, man. All right, guys. We'll be back in just a second. All right, guys, and we're back. So, let's start off with this really early Raw review, fellas and ladies. So we start off the night, like I said, with the promo videos, the video packages, hyping up what happened in Jeddah. I thought those were really good. It ended with a big overview picture of the stadium with fireworks going up in the air and stuff like that. It was really cool. And then we cut to the inside of the stadium where we are today. And they talk about being in Montreal, and then Roman Reigns' music hits, and it was a boo fest. I actually was not expecting this. Did they boo him? Do you remember the last time they were in Montreal? Did they give him this kind of reaction last time, too?
Canada normally, yeah.
They didn't? Yeah. I did not realize that. They were booing hard, and Michael Cole, or Coachman and Corey Graves, they tried to do their best to kind of cover up for, you know, the fact that he's getting booed real hard in this one. And they were like, you know, the reception was much better in Jeddah than it is here in Montreal and stuff like that.
Well, Canada's always been a country that does opposite things that WWE wants them to do.
Right.
But Montreal is a very, very, very much a smart city. Montreal is very much a smart city.
Is it kind of like, yeah, kind of like a New York City?
Montreal and Toronto are like New York and Philly and Chicago. Like, yeah, smart cities.
Gotcha.
Montreal is one of them, yeah.
Gotcha. I put in my notes, man, parts of this promo was rough because, you know, he's trying to convey seriousness and what's the word I'm looking for? He's trying to convey seriousness
Fiction.
Yeah, exactly. And they're just booing him so hard. And I don't think it... I don't know. Do you think that gets to him on a personal level, or do you think, like, when he walks backstage, he's got a smile on his face? He's like, hey, man, it's business.
No, I think he has a smile on his face because he knows that's his job,
yeah.
which is what I try to argue with you and other guys all the time. People think he's a babyface, and they want him to be a heel, when really he's actually doing what the company wants him to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Oh yeah, I've never thought. Yeah, I've always thought that he does exactly what the company wants him to do. I think he's probably, you know, and he's a locker room leader. Like as a person, sure. I think he's probably, you know, one of the better human beings that our kids could look up to as a role model.
He's not. He's not an actual babyface. That's what I mean. Like he's not your traditional babyface. He hasn't been.
Right.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
I got you. Do you think the WWE is still trying to get Roman cheered, or do you think that they're looking at doing something different?
I'm not the one to ask this because I don't think they've ever tried to specifically get him cheered. And I may sound like the biggest, dumbest idiot in the world. I just don't think that. I think the second the crowd pivoted from the very beginning, the crowd pivoted, particularly at the Royal Rumble that year when he won it. And then once WrestleMania hit, they realized, ain't nothing we really going to do. So I think they tried to continue to make them continue to make him the top guy. I think they continue to try to make him the marquee story. And then there's a difference between being a protagonist and being cheered. Like, a protagonist and babyface aren't necessarily always the same thing, right?
Gotcha.
Now, to answer your question, I don't think they've done it for a while, but specifically now, I feel like they're just like, well, forget all this nonsense about babyface and heel. We're just going to try to tell good stories with this dude.
It makes sense. I mean, you know, I'm not smart enough to fully see the big picture just yet, so I don't know if you're right or wrong, but I see your point of view. Does that make sense?
Sure. Well, you know, I'm just speculating as much as anybody else is, but
yeah, I got you.
Everything in WWE, most everything in WWE happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And even if something, even if they differ from that reason, it's still another reason because there was another decision made. But the entire story of Roman Reigns from beating Undertaker a year or so ago to now has been he hasn't done anything of note since then. He's lost every big match that wasn't a part of the Shield. And, you know, got hurt, had the worst year of his career, built himself back up to finally face Brock again, and got beat again. Like, that's so the story, I feel like there's a story trying to be told with this dude, with maybe humbling him or something. I don't know what the end of the game is, but they're trying to do something.
Okay, last question about Roman before we move on a little bit and talk about what happened after his promo. At WrestleMania 30, we've seen where crowd reaction and just the WWE Universe in general actually got the storylines to be changed.
31.
Yeah, excuse me, 31 in New Orleans. Yeah. I apologize.
That was in San Francisco, but yeah.
No. Okay, yeah, then I am talking about WrestleMania 30 then with Daniel Bryan.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Forgive me. I thought you were talking about Roman. Okay, yes.
Oh, yeah. No.
Absolutely.
No. Yeah, so absolutely so we've correct. Seen, we all seen where, actually, when we say we've seen, I actually had not got back into wrestling yet. I got back in shortly after 30.
Okay.
When Daniel Bryan was in the ladder match and won the Intercontinental title. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was at 31, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I got into it shortly before that. But anyway, besides the point. We've seen where the WWE Universe was so passionate about something, and that something being Daniel Bryan being successful. And we actually seen where WWE as a corporation, Titan Entertainment, actually took note and changed stuff around to get Daniel Bryan in that position. So yep. My question for you is, do you think that the negative reaction that Roman gets, like in Montreal, do you think that that reaction would ever cause WWE to change course with Roman and possibly make them do something else?
It has already.
That was going to be the second part was, or yeah. Has it already happened?
Yeah, it has already. So, again...
And, of course, I just want to preface this with... Yeah. Of course, this is your opinion. Someone might disagree. You know what I mean? But in your opinion, do you think it's happened or do you think it will happen?
Most people are going to disagree with me because you know me well enough to know that I look at things tremendously differently than everybody else.
I got you. So I love that. I actually love that about you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
In the eyes of most fans, they would say that it's already happened. WrestleMania 31, all reports were up until like Friday, Roman was supposed to win the title. The only reason he didn't was because Brock re-signed and they knew that the crowd was going to lose their minds at Roman winning, so they pivoted, went with Seth. Okay?
Gotcha.
I would argue, this would be my argument, which is different than that argument. It's similar, but it's different. I would argue that the plan all along was to make Roman, Seth, Dean, and Bray the core four. Not too similar from Okada, Naito, Tanahashi, and Omega to make them their core four, but with Roman just being the number one of those guys. And if you look at what's happened over these past few years, I did a column about it. While Roman has been the number one guy to be pushed out of those four, all four of those guys have had every major moment in the company. Seth was a champ for forever. Dean Ambrose and Bray Wyatt were the ones, except for Charlotte and Sasha that one time, were the only other ones to main event pay-per-views who, when there was the Universal Championship match or a WWE Championship match, they were the main champions over the years. Not counting Brock, so that was the plan. Now, I say that knowing that Roman was going to be the top guy. He was always scheduled to be the top guy, the number one. But I feel like fans think when you say top guy, and it's funny because they say this, but then they go to Japan and they say something different. But I feel like when you say top guy, Roman got to sit on the hill by himself. He don't got to sit on the hill by himself. He's just at the tallest chair. But he's at a table with three or four guys alongside him. It's not like he's doing it on his own.
Okay, I got you.
But yes, they have pivoted with Roman before. Very, very clearly and very audibly.
Okay, cool. I just wanted your opinion on that. I didn't know if... I actually do agree with you. Looking back, I do think that they did pivot for whatever reason, whether it be either fan reaction or maybe they even thought that maybe just on a personal note, Roman wasn't ready. Maybe I doubt physically because he's a physical specimen, but you know, maybe he wasn't there quite because we know back then he was struggling with promos and stuff like that. So it, you know, there could have been a number of reasons, but I do think that they had different plans going into 31 than what they ultimately did.
Build was watching, bro, because we look at that whole entire build up totally different if Roman and Brock face off more than twice.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree. Okay, cool, man. So anyway, we'll get back to the deal now. I just wanted to talk to you about that for a second. I felt like there was a little bit of a pop when Jinder come out. Did you see that? Did you hear that? Initial pop, I feel like.
It may have been. Remember, Jinder's from that area.
What? No, he's not. The modern day Maharaja! It's from India.
You really didn't know that?
Yeah, I did. You told me before.
Okay. I'm about to say, you know, yeah. So, you know, I'm sure some people were like, oh, hey, he's one of us.
I love the gender. Anyway, he comes out and he says that his main one of his pet peeves is people having excuses for when they come up short, excuses for their shortcomings, which I thought was really funny because his whole character is always complaining about how he was cheated out of the U.S. title in the last couple weeks.
And he even said that, unlike me, who has a legit gripe with Jeff Hardy because he cheated.
Yeah. So, yeah. I absolutely love it, man. I absolutely love it. Man, that crowd was crazy for Sami Zayn, right? And then they were even crazier for Kevin Owens. And this was, and I know I said that I would never complain about commentary again, but before we went on air, me and you were just kind of shooting the bull, waiting for me to get everything ready, and you said that you did have a little complaint about the commentary today, and I said, you know what, I kind of did too, and my biggest complaint is something that's so simple, and that it irritates me when they talk over the entrances, especially when there's one that's so, you know, loud and awesome as when a person comes back to their hometown and wrestles in front of their hometown. And I understand that Montreal isn't technically Sammy and KO's hometown, but it's just 15 to 30 minutes away, right? And maybe 45, as they were arguing about. But when Kevin Owens comes out, Michael Cole is like, Sammy only lives 15 minutes away, and KO is from so-and-so, which is only 30 minutes away. And Coachman goes, more like 45. And then Michael Cole is like, well, Kevin told me it was only 30 minutes, so I'm going with what he said because he's actually from here, Coach. And I'm like, why in the hell are you arguing about this? Be quiet for 5 seconds and just let us soak in this awesome crowd reaction. You know? Maybe it's just me.
That, I exactly feel the same way, but I never have a problem with them speaking through the entrances because it's their job to tell the story.
Yeah, so if yeah.
You know what I mean? But to your point, which I completely agree with, there are moments when you have to know the moment. You have to feel the moment. And while I love JR, I may not be as big a JR guy as you are, but I love the dude. His greatest attribute was knowing the moment.
Right.
Like, he always was aware of the moment, whether he needed to scream at the top of his lungs, whether he needed to shut the hell up. He always was aware of the moment. And those two entrances were moments because, number one, I don't think anybody watching expected that. Even though we knew they were from Montreal, I don't think anybody watching expected that they were going to get that much adulation.
I don't think so either.
And number two, the way Sammy responded to the cheers is all-time great. It is all-time great.
Why don't you explain it to everyone a little bit, his kind of reaction to the humongous pop that he was getting.
So we already know Sammy was already a bit of a neurotic guy as a face. As a heel, he's turned it up like 1,000,000%. So it's like this self-aggrandizing, extra, like, aw shucks me. And, like, he was falling over himself, just like, it's hard to describe, but it was truly hilarious. Like, the man acted like he had never heard a crowd reaction before.
That's so true, so true.
Yeah. I imagine the way he acted last night is how a woman who got surprised by a proposal would react. Something similar to that.
That's so true, yet, man.
The difference is Sammy knew that the proposal was coming, but yet he still did it anyway.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it, and I love how they put a personal touch on there. They each acted, I thought, accordingly, like in a fun way. Maybe not accordingly, but in a fun way. You know, they both spoke. They were speaking French, correct?
Yes, they both spoke French. Yes.
Yeah, they were speaking French to the crowd, and then the crowd started chanting, "We, we, we, we."
That was amazing. So I love that the South has changed. Texas in particular, like South and Southeast Texas, changed the yes chant to C when Del Rio was doing stuff.
Absolutely.
And now the Canadians have changed it to we. I love it. It's hilarious.
I do too. I'm with you 100%.
Let's not get it. I don't want to be disrespectful. The French Canadians, not the English Canadians.
Gotcha.
You do know Kevin Owens' first language is French, right?
It seems like I read that somewhere that he is ESL, English second language.
Kevin, you know how he learned English?
Huh?
Watching wrestling.
Really?
I swear to God.
I did not know that.
He would watch Raw, and there would be a punch, and JR would say punch. And he'd be like, oh, so that must mean this. Okay. And literally that's how he learned how to speak English, was by watching wrestling.
Wow, I never knew that. That's really, really cool. I bet that was a dream come true when he got to meet JR, because I assume that he's met him at some point after signing with the WWE, obviously, you know. So I bet...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I bet that was truly awesome, because I, you know, like I said, I spent some time with JR 2 weekends ago now, and even just the 10 minutes that I spent with them talking about commentary, about my commentary from the evening before, it was a dream come true. So think about, you know, a man that is now a professional wrestler and living his dream, getting to meet the guy that he watched growing up, and on top of that, who inadvertently taught him how to speak English. You know,
you have a lot of wrestlers who are very, very open fans. Like Bayley is one that, you know, her whole character is built around the fact that she's a fan who made it. Right.
Right.
But a lot of characters do that. Kevin Owens is probably the biggest fan in the entire company, but he's so good at playing his character. You just wouldn't know it if you didn't know him.
That's really cool.
You know what I mean? Like, Kevin Owens is as big a super fan as there is. Jericho talked about it in their feud when he turned on him. And Jericho showed the pictures of Kevin Owens doing the Jericho pose with the Jericho shirt on, with all the Jericho posters in his room.
That was going to be my next question. If you had ever, I assume that you did. You see that picture of Kevin Owens when he's a kid doing the Jericho pose in the Jericho shirt?
Yes, man. And it's hilarious, and I love that Kevin gave that to Jericho so they could use that for the feud.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, you know. Kevin Owens is one of, and Sammy to the same extent are two of those guys you're just happy to see succeed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by the way, one more thing before we move on, I just wanted to point out, because you know Joe had a recorded video before Jinder and Sami and Kevin came out. So basically, the opening segment of Raw was, hey, we want to beat Roman today. No, I don't want to beat Roman. No, I want to beat Roman. No, man, I don't want to beat Roman. It was so, yeah.
It does. I do feel like that right there does make Roman look like the top guy. When there is guys that are willing to basically fight each other to have the opportunity to try and beat Roman, I think that makes him look like, you know, the top guy. Does it make sense?
Absolutely.
So I do think that WWE, I mean, obviously WWE knows what they're doing for the most part. You know what I mean? We can armchair quarterback a lot of the stuff they do, and that's my job. That's your job. That's what we do for a living. But in this instance, I think they're doing the right thing by having Roman just slightly above everyone, and all these guys, all the Jinders, the Kevins, the Sammys, the Joes are like, you know what? I'm just as good. I'm, you know, but they got me on this tier that's slightly lower than Roman. That's why I'm going to beat Roman's ass, and I'm going to take it, the main spot. And I dig that. I think that is really cool, you know?
I think so, too.
Next, we have everyone attacking Roman, and Lashley and then Braun Strowman come in for the save. Now, Lashley and Braun they don't have ties to Roman, right? They were jumping in because Lashley is in a feud with Sami Zayn, right?
Lashley and Braun seem to have issues with Kevin and Sami, yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. So it wasn't technically about Roman. They were just like, oh, yeah, you pieces of shit aren't going to be pieces of shit to someone else. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yes.
Gotcha. So next up, after the fight was done, they go to commercial, they come back, and it's announced that there's going to be a 6-man tag match that night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Elias is in the ring, and he gets a crazy reaction from Montreal, even after he dogs Montreal a bit. Bobby Roode interrupts, "Glorious, glorious."
I want that to be my ringtone, bro. That's funny.
I thought they had a pretty decent match. Bobby Roode and his sidewalk slam, spine buster, whatever you want to call it, that reminds me of Arn Anderson, man. He is a throwback a throwback to 80s NWA wrestling to me.
Oh yeah, he was some guys are born too late.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Roode's one of those. Bobby Roode, if he was born in like the 40s or like the 50s and wrestled in the 60s and 70s and 80s,
mm-hmm,
that was his time. Because everything he does is from that era.
Yep. I completely agree. Right. Yep. I completely agree. 100%. And have you seen the clip with him versus Ziggler at the Starrcade in 2017 over in the Carolinas? In Greensboro, I believe.
Oh, yeah. With Arn coming in and looking like he never stopped wrestling?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah,
that's,
man.
That's crazy.
Yeah, Arn still had some good years left on him. But as far as Bobby Roode goes, he looked like he was right in his place throwing up that 4 to Arn Anderson when he was standing in the corner before he gave him the glorious DDT.
You know what? Now that I think about it, Bobby Roode would have definitely been a horseman.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now that I think about it, well, technically, he's like a baby horseman because Fortune, he was part of that. So.
Yeah, he was like a grandchild or a son of the horseman, basically.
Yeah, like twice removed or something like that.
Divorced. He was a divorced cousin. during the match, Elias actually hurts Roode. He hurts his neck. They stop the match. The medical doctor stops the match. They take Roode to the back. Elias gets on the microphone, declares himself the winner. After that, we have Authors of Pain. Oh, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I just want to touch on, I love, Kevin Dunn gets a lot of complaints, as he should, a lot of the time. But there are some things he does that are excellent. I believe in calling out good things when you see it. Before the match with Elias was in the back, they said that Elias had found some special Saudi Arabian tea that was supposed to soothe his vocal cords, right? And then he kept drinking it. What does he do in the match? He kicks Bobby Roode in the throat. That wasn't by accident. That wasn't by accident. I just wanted to point that out.
That's so,
yeah,
so
that
funny. I didn't even put those together, man. I did not even put those together.
Yep. Very well told.
After the match, we have AOP coming out, and I put in my notes, Authors of Pain look manly. That's what I put, dude. They look like real men, bro.
They really do.
Help me with these names. Their opponents for the night is Jean-Paul and Francisco?
Francois.
Jean-Paul and Francois.
The most stereotypical French-Canadian names you could ever find.
Right, yeah. Let's see. Wasn't much of a match. It's called the Super Collider, right?
Yes.
Okay, so they did their signature move, which is the Super Collider, into their finisher, which is the Last Chapter. They're freaking beasts, dude. I was just looking through my notes, and I had just a couple more things. I don't even need to say them because they're just absolute freaking beasts, man. Go ahead, sir.
If your name ends in Hardy or Wyatt, you should be nervous. Because they're coming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they, man, that's going to be rough. They are just hard-hitting, man. Imagine them going over to New Japan, dude, with that hard-hitting style. They'd fit in great over there.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
They probably are more built for New Japan than WWE.
I bet.
And I hate to say that, but I don't hate to say that. You know, I'm a WWE guy first.
Right.
Nothing against New Japan. But yeah, look at what War Machine did over there. Look at what, what do you call, Lance Archer and David Boy. I forgot their
Killer,
tag team name.
Killer Elite Squad.
Killer Elite Squad, yeah. Look what they're doing over there. Look at what every incarnation of the Top Bullet Club team has done, heavyweight team has done over there with. Like, yeah, they love Haas tag teams, especially Gage and Haas tag teams.
Yeah, yeah.
They would kill over there, yeah.
Yeah, they absolutely would. And, you know, I would love to see it. I would absolutely love to see it. So after that, the AOP grab a microphone, which is not something that I have seen too much. Now, you watching NXT, you might have seen this a little bit more because I was reading some NXT spoilers and stuff before they came up. And they were... But they there at the end with NXT, were they talking a little bit?
Never talk.
They never did?
They had one promo, literally, where Paul was like, say something. And then he was like, we're going to get you, or something like that. I'm obviously speaking his tongue. I don't know how to speak in Albanian.
Right.
But you know what I mean.
Gotcha.
But yeah. But literally, I think they spoke maybe one time. In NXT, but it was after Paul was like, you need to say something.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
The first time I ever really remember them genuinely talking was when they debuted on the main roster and they told Paul, we don't need you no more, bro.
Yeah, that's it. Go on, back to business. We'll start booking our own hotels.
first world problems.
Yeah, first world problems. So after that, after the AOP match, Seth Rollins comes out to a great ovation. It looked like he had a lot of fun too, man. At one point in time, he just went over to the ropes and, you know, just put his arms on the ropes and just looked around as they were chanting and you deserve it and maybe a thank you, Seth, or something like that.
Great ovation doesn't begin to describe that. That man got a Stone Cold Steve Austin pop.
Didn't he?
No exaggeration. That was one of the loudest pops. So, like, a lot of the times you can't tell how loud the pop is at home.
Right.
Right? Unless it's literally just otherworldly. Most of the times, these guys are getting great, huge ovations, and it sounds, at home. That man got such a big pop, he stopped and almost cried. Like, they were so over, like, he was so over with that crowd.
Right.
Like, I was emotional watching that. Like, I was emotional because you could tell that man was truly touched by that.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's it must have been really good to be him last night. Just
absolutely,
it was just cool, and especially because you know he's not from there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then
so for a whole nother city in a whole nother country, to pay you so much respect like that for being so great at your craft, that has to that has to be something special to you.
And him talking about all the travel that he's done and what he's had to go through, you know, and I guess just basically being completely exhausted and mentally gone and being away from his family and all that. Because he's, after the show, of course, he did the show closing promo, the dark promo, and was, and he kind of touched on it again, like he touched about, touched on it here. But he was like, you know, every single ounce of this is worth it because of you guys. And you guys make this ring feel like home. And like, after the in the dark match promo, in the dark promo, he's, when he did that, like, you could literally hear him, like, the tears welling up in his eyes. He was so affected by that. So that's what you want to see. That's what you want to see.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. I totally, totally dig that. After Seth Rollins is out cutting his promo for a little bit, talks about, he actually takes a dig at Lesnar and then actually takes up for his boy Roman. He says that Lesnar is not here.
He got booed for that.
He what now?
He got booed for that.
He did, didn't he? he said that Lesnar is not there week in and week out, I think is what he said. And then with when it comes to Rollins, he did say, you know, we do know that Rollins is the true universal, I mean, excuse me, Roman is the true universal champion. We've seen it on the footage. And everyone's like, brr, and he's like,
hey, Roman's my guy, but the footage don't lie. You saw it too.
Oh, yeah. After Balor comes out, they talk for a little bit, and then the Miz's music hit, and bro, I popped. I legit thought that the Miz was there. I was like, oh yeah, Miz is back.
Can I tell you how the difference between Miz and the Miztourage?
Don't tell me. I just now thought about it. Is it quiet on the set? Please?
That's the difference, yeah.
Did not even think about that. But it makes sense, because I specifically know they didn't do that last night. So, cool. Well, now I know. I feel like those commercials that used to come on Channel 2, you know, with the star. The more you know. they come out, and you could tell they're obviously hiding something. They're concealing a gun. No, wait, they're concealing a shirt.
No, I thought they had on Thanos shirts. I was like, these dudes are crazy if they have on those shirts.
Have on what shirts?
Thanos, the guy from Infinity War?
Oh. Yeah, they were concealing something. You know, I was just joking about the gun thing, because, you know, they had their hand up front, so it kind of, you know, mob movies, a lot of times, that's, you know, kind of where they reach to grab a gun sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I can see what you're talking about. It did look like it a little bit.
Right. And anyway, I absolutely loved those custom shirts that they were wearing last night. What did you think about them? So here, I'll explain them real quick to everyone listening in case you didn't watch. They had big, probably about the size of a person's fist, cutouts of each person's head. And it was both members of the Miztourage, Finn Balor, and Seth Rollins. So there was four
with
different
scotch
ones
tape,
on there.
Dog.
And they were scotch taped onto the shirt.
For the record. So let's say this. Definitely Seth Rollins was the MVP of the show. But right underneath him, Bo and Axel.
Oh, yeah.
First and foremost, the shirts. And they were plain white tees. Like, they went to Family Dollar and bought the t-shirts. Then, everything about them was hilarious. They were like, no more, it's, no more Battle Club, nope. No more Shield, nope. It's all about the Four Horsemen. And they were going to be the Four Horsemen. They're like, no. And then Axel's face. Axel looked like somebody stole his ice cream. Bo kept having to pick his head up, and he kept putting it back down.
He said, chin up.
Oh, that was one of my favorite segments in a long time. From the moment Seth came out to the end, I loved every minute of the segment.
I agree with you. I completely agree. So they try to attack him, or they do attack him afterwards, and don't they?
That's
what I thought for a second. But then,
they had been dissed for the second week in a row. What are you supposed to do?
Right. P.S., can I say real quick that I love how Bo Dallas just wears one glove on his right hand?
He's a rock star, bro.
Is that why he does it? Because Michael Jackson?
I guess so. I just, if you noticed, him and Axel started getting way more bougie once they started hanging with Miz.
Going bad and bougie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, have you
made that song they were talking about Bo and Axel?
Have you seen where they take Bad and Bougie and they line it up with I think it's Can't Touch This. Have you seen that?
I don't know if I've seen. Is that the one I saw? I've seen them line up with something, yes. But was it Can't Touch? It might have been that. It was one of them, but it's perfect.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. I just thought we'll watch it either if we take another break or after we while we're uploading the show and editing, we'll watch it. It's hilarious. Okay. I've asked you this before, and you said no. I want to ask you again. Not today. I haven't asked you in a couple weeks, but I want to ask you it again to see if your answer is still a no. But to me, every day it seems more and more like everyone's slowly becoming a member of a stable. Not every single person, don't take me literally, but a lot. And that is similar to New Japan.
Yep.
Do you feel like, is your answer still no, you don't think that's happening in WWE, or are you kind of starting to feel like, man, everyone's a part of a stable? It's starting to become a member of a stable. Like they're making more and more stables and everyone's a part of it.
If we're comparing it to New Japan, no. Because New Japan has five stables, basically, and you're either a part of that or you're by yourself.
Gotcha.
That's not WWE. What WWE has been doing recently is everybody seems to have an ally. I wouldn't say a stable, per se, but everybody seems to have an ally. Like, Braun and Bobby Lashley are starting to team together a bit. And Finn and Seth, until last night, have started to kind of be chummy. You know, and Cameron and Sam. So it seems like everybody kind of teams together and has an ally, but I wouldn't say stables. I can't think of, other than Sanity, I can't think of one actual true stable in the main roster right now.
Well, I was thinking, does technically the Shield are still together, right?
So the Shield never broke up.
Right.
But they're not. But they've kind of all agreed to go and do their own thing until they need to get back together, I guess.
I got you. The reason, I don't legit think that the only reason WWE, I do feel like WWE is slowly moving, transitioning towards where a lot of their top stars are member of stables. Now, I could be wrong. This is just my personal, a theory, right? This is my theory.
Okay.
And the reason I think they're doing that, I think, you know, and this is a small part of it, is, you know, just like every other promotion in the world right now, this is also a theory of mine, New Japan being the hot thing on the corner right now, on the block, everyone's kind of looking at New Japan, right? And they're kind of like, you know, hey, I kind of like the way New Japan does this or does that. You know, they're the hot new thing, so people are kind of, our promotions are kind of trying to emulate them to a certain degree on little small things. And I think WWE is inadvertently emulating them on all their big name stars having a stable that they're associated with. And I think that WWE is looking at it like, well, man, we got these guys on the road X amount of time. They can only go one-on-one so much before it starts getting stale, and we can't give away the one-on-one match if we want to put it on, you know, a pay-per-view, which entices people to then in turn buy the network so they can see the pay-per-views. So if they have stables, I think that opens up avenues where you can have more matches with people without giving away the true one-on-one match. Does that make sense at all?
I mean, I disagree. What you're saying makes sense, but for number one, WWE can't copy New Japan when WWE started that in the 90s when there was a Nation Domination and the Heart Foundation and the Disciples of Apocalypse, D-Generation X, and the NWA, and like, yeah, they started that.
Right. Well, maybe they see, you know, New Japan's doing it, or maybe New Japan has nothing to do with it. But I'm saying, you know, I feel like that the WWE is kind of transitioning to where a lot of people are in stables, you know?
Well, okay, so I see what you're saying, but I think my issue is with your use of the word stable. Because when I think of stable traditionally, it is a group of three or more guys who completely and audibly come together and admit they're together, have a name, have joint, have the exact same goals, have the exact same everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a stable to me. Like, Evolution was a stable to me.
Right. Right.
Well, not to me, but Evolution was a stable, right?
One of the best, too.
The Shield is a stable. Like, that's a stable. So, if we look now, you have guys who have teamed together because they have common enemies. Like, Shinsuke Nakamura and Rusev Day have teamed together because they have common enemies. They're not a stable. They have nothing to do with each other except for the fact that they both hate Bryan and AJ.
Right.
But they're not I wouldn't call them a stable. I'll give you, if you want to say AJ, Gallows, and Anderson, I'll give you that. Sure. Because they have history. They teamed together in another country. They teamed together in this company. I'll give you that. I'll give you Sanity because they came up as a stable. But other than that, Ron and Bobby aren't a stable, I don't think, because they just decided to tag together because they had similar enemies. Sammy and Kevin are only two people, and that's a tag team, not a stable. So I get what you're saying. I just don't like... I think I disagree with the word stable. I feel like, yes, there are allies.
Yeah, maybe allies would be... allies
than ever. I think so. I can get you that.
Yeah, maybe, but allies is probably a better word to use than stable. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah, because if there was stable wars again, then there would be like four or five stables that had three or more people.
Right. It's only
technically two if you want to count AJ and the club, who probably won't even have any more, probably won't be around each other for a couple, you know how they do.
Yeah. I think they mess up when they don't put the club together, dude. Putting the Balor Club when Gallows and Anderson were with Balor, I loved it. When the club gets with AJ, I love it. I think they should do that more often. Like you just said, you know how they are. They'll split them up for 2 months, and then when there needs to be a six-man tag match, they'll get together real quick, you know? I think you should be together a lot more. That's just my personal opinion. Sure. I'm not talking about, like, it doesn't... I don't think it helps the storyline any. I'm just a fan. You know, that's just my fan.
Yeah, you're a Bullet Club fan, sure. Yeah. Well, let me ask you this before we move on, and I know we've kind of really delved in a lot of extra stuff that we normally don't do, but let me ask you this.
Let's hear it.
In the past 10 years, and I'll give you the Shield. I'll give you that. But in the past 10 years, besides the Shield, can you name me a face stable that actually worked?
A face stable that actually worked. And in
WWE. And mind you, the only reason the Shield worked as a face was because they were such a vicious heel for a year and a half.
That's what I was about to ask, if you would even consider them to be a face stable.
From February 2014 to the time Seth turned on them, they were definitely faces.
Yeah. A face stable. Real quick, do you remember the Nation of Domination theme song? I want that on my phone. Nation, Domination.
That ain't got nothing to do with the question, but okay. But yeah, it's a great theme song.
Man, no, not really.
So that's why I don't think they keep the club together, because face stables just don't work.
Yeah, no, I can't
they
think
They definitely
of.
Don't work unless they have a... The only reason face stables normally work, at least in Western wrestling, I can't speak for Japan, but the only reason face stables work in Western wrestling, in WWE in particular, is to offset a heel stable.
Right.
So, and the problem with that is, here's the problem. When you have a stable, the Shield was so different because the Shield was one of the first ever stables that was serious and consistent and successful, but they didn't have a leader. They were truly a group, right?
Mm-hmm.
99% of every stables have a leader. So the problem with having a face stable is there's going to be an audible leader. There's going to be a very clear leader or very clear top guy in the group, right?
Right.
And other guys are going to end up looking like minions or looking like, not servants, but you know what I mean? Looking like they serve the leader. And on a face standpoint, that's not a good look, because you want everybody to get cheered. So if you kept Gallows and Anderson with AJ and they stayed face, and they did this for 3, 4, 5, 6 months, that would hurt Anderson and Gallows more than it would help them, because it looks like they're AJ's, you know, lackeys.
Right.
As heels, that's the point. The Mysterious were the Mysterious is so comfortably known as lackeys that their nickname is Entourage. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's why they don't keep them together, because I think it would hurt Gallup.
It's a good point. It's a good point. So after that, we had our first, it might have been our only, women's division match of Raw last night. They had the Natalya match we'll talk about in a little bit. This was Ruby Riott versus Sasha Banks. Ruby Riott in her stable. Her and her peeps, the Riott Squad, come out. Sasha's interviewed before the match, and they're asking her about Bayley, of course. And she's like, our friendship's got to, like, withstand the test of time. But it's just going through a hardship right now. I was actually trying to emulate Paul Heyman there. Good day, sir. Do what now?
Ladies and gentlemen.
But anyway, so Ruby Riott and Sasha Banks have a pretty good match. Did you notice when Sasha tried to leapfrog Ruby after she's coming off the ropes, you know? The camera, it wasn't the camera angle's fault. I guess Sasha did not get a good enough jump, or she wasn't expecting Ruby to come upon her that quick or something. But anyway, her knees, if you rewatch it, her knees only got about as high as Ruby's head. But luckily, Ruby was able to sidestep and actually ran around her. Did you notice that?
I did not. I regret it now. But I was watching this match, but I wasn't giving it my full attention because I was. I'm sorry. I gotta be honest. I was cleaning my DVR. I was deleting,
cleaning it
like
out.
Old stuff, so I could see it in the background.
Yeah.
But you know, but I only have three quick thoughts about the match. First and foremost, for everything I saw, it was a tremendous match. Number one.
Gotcha.
Number two, Graves trying to make the Riott Squad look like they're a real unit and they make sense was like, that was what I assume Michael Cole sounds like to you. Like, don't insult my intelligence. Nothing about them makes sense.
Yeah, what he said something about, he was trying to explain how opposites attract, right?
That, and yeah, he said that he talked to Ruby earlier that day, and Ruby was like, yeah, people think that this was just something that came together. No, this was planned and we had been working on this. No, stop. No. we have accepted the Riott Squad at this point. Even if they don't make sense, they've been around long enough and they've done enough for us to accept them. Don't ruin it. It is what it is. It's one of those WWE things. The last thing I want to say real quick before we can move on, I guess, is in that interview that Sasha did before the match, that's the one thing that's happened in the past month and a half that has assured me Sasha's going to be the one to turn heel.
Okay.
And I say that because Sasha, heels are normally delusional, right?
Right.
Sasha was saying that, I don't understand what Bayley's problem is. You know, I thought we were good. Bayley didn't have a problem with you since Elimination Chamber.
Right.
She didn't walk around problems since Elimination Chamber, bro. And you sitting there acting like you don't know what's wrong with her?
What do y'all do on your off days, man? Do y'all not talk?
I'm saying. And then you talking about this, but number one, on your Instagram, you shade Bayley as much as you can now. And number two, there's a video showing of both of them at a takeover, and they're supposed to sit together, but Sasha tells the fan to switch seats with her so the fan can sit between her and Bayley. So clearly you know there's a problem. So stop. That lets me know that she's about to turn heel. You know, because normally I think most people would think Bayley would, because Bayley's the one walking around here looking like someone stole the cookies.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think it's Sasha like it should be.
I got you. So after the Riott Squad distracted Sasha multiple times, or the referee, Ruby hit a riot kick while Sasha was kind of leaned over off the top turnbuckle, got the pin for the good. Uno, dos, three. And
looked
then
real good.
Yeah. It did, yeah. Next, we had a Titus Worldwide interview. What's up? What I missed?
Did you see the Alexa Bliss promo?
Oh man, I forgot to put that in here. I actually did not watch it. I was going to ask you if you could tell me what was in there, but I seen it. You know, the moment of Bliss or something like that. But I fast forwarded it through it.
Okay. So
because I was running behind, I had to text. I had to push our time back. You know, mine and your time back twice. So
sure. Yeah. So first and foremost, I realize a lot of people don't like this. This might be the best things on the show to me. So Alexa starts off with the most somber face. You never know when a bully will strike. Okay. First and foremost, you got me. You already got me. Number one. So as she's talking, she talks about, and we know, if you know Lexi Kaufman, like if you know the real her, like you follow her, she loves Disney. So she was talking about a time when she went to Disney with who was supposed to be my best friend at the time, talking about Naya. And it's the happiest place on earth. And the whole time, Naya's making fun of Alexa, saying that she can't get on any of the rides because she's so short. And then she says, even at the teacups. And then this is a direct quote. And I'm going to say it exactly how she said it. It's a cup. You just sit in it. It's a cup. I was dying. And then she talked about how when they were eating, Naya had two turkey legs, one in each hand. It was just trash, you know, Alexa. It's just so bad. It's like, I know it's so obnoxious. I know Naya's sitting in the back watching, laughing her ass off.
Right.
Because it's just so obnoxious. But she was really like, it's a cup. You just sit in it. It's a cup. Yeah.
I think,
you get a chance to go back and watch that.
Yeah, I need to go back and watch it now that I got more time today. I think Alexa is great on the microphone, dude. She's doing good things, and she is only getting better at everything. Everything in her game right now, I think, is improving.
She is the best. She's the best talker. She's the best character, which is why, even though she's not the greatest in-ring performer, doesn't matter. That she got all the rest of the components.
Yeah, I hear you. So after that, we had a Titus Worldwide interview, right?
Worldwide?
Backstage. Worldwide? So Renee, it was Renee, right, that interviewed him?
Yes.
And she asked him about the slide, the fall at the Greatest Royal Rumble. For anybody that didn't see it, put it in your Google machine. It was absolutely hilarious.
He took the throne or the torch from the Shockmaster. Like, that body is bigger and better than the Shockmaster. Because that was in front of 60,000 people on pay-per-view. Yeah.
It reminded me of, what is old boy's name that was the quarterback of the Jets? Mark Sanchez, butt fumble.
Yeah.
He took him to two straight AFC championship games, his rookie and second year, or is that or his second or third year? I can't remember. And it looked like was it his rookie year? He looked like he was about to become the next Tom Brady, you know, going to win five Super Bowls and stuff. I don't know if they made the playoffs after that. But anyway, then he came down to, he was the backup for Dak Prescott for a while as well. I don't know where he's going now. Maybe Buffalo? I'm not quite sure. Anyway, do you remember when he, on one of his worst seasons of his career, he ran into one of his offensive linemen while trying to do a quarterback sneak and bounced off his ass and fell backwards and fumbled the ball?
How could you not remember that? That is, yes. He is known strictly and solely for the butt fumble.
The butt fumble, yeah. And anyway, Titus kind of reminded me of that. But so after Titus fell, this 3 days after he fell, they're interviewing him about it, and he said, yeah, everything just worked out just the way I planned. And then he said, you know what? I'm not going to say that. I just fell. But What was so funny about it was he did not seem like he wanted to talk about it. And that's what made it so funny to me. Either, you know, and he's like one of the most amazing human beings ever. And so this, I highly doubt that he's losing sleep over this. I bet he thinks it's funny too. But in his, as far as his character is concerned, his character, he makes it seem like, God, I want people to stop talking about this. You know what I mean?
So Titus fell.
Right.
Most embarrassing thing maybe in wrestling history. Right? Legitimately. And it was so funny backstage that they kept showing it over and over and over again that night. They've shown it over and over again since then. Right?
Uh-huh.
This man got a t-shirt from it. They have a t-shirt about it now that's already out. Already out.
I did not know that.
Yes, he has a t-shirt already out. And on top of that, he got a storyline out of it. So come on, man. Titus winning right now, bro.
Wow. I did not know that he already had a t-shirt.
Oh, yes. I will be getting us those t-shirts, by the way.
I'm down, dude. I'm down. So next, we had a Matt Hardy promo, which was weird and fun, as always.
Well, for the record, Corbin came out. Corbin came.
Oh, that's right, man. I forgot. Yeah, Corbin came out. You know, they exchanged some words, and it looks like, you know, they're setting something up right there, wouldn't you say?
Corbin's playing this character where he is the bully and the hater of fun. Corbin is basically a metal Ebenezer Scrooge.
Some right? Standards and practices.
Yeah, something like that. But instead of he's stopping fun because he thinks it's the right thing to do, he just does it because it's fun for him. But yes, Matt and Bray, y'all got to see this promo.
It was pretty funny. It was pretty comical. Yes. Matt Hardy's in a room that is lit up, and then the lights go out, and he looks around like he doesn't know what's going on, and Bray shows up right next to him. It's pretty good. They talk jointly for a little bit, and then next we see...
About how they have transcended time and space.
Right, right.
And they show this video about where apparently that they're Zeitgeists.
Oh, you really?
Word, yeah. were around forever. So they show pictures of them on the Potomac with George Washington, and show pictures of them on the moon when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. Yeah, it's just the most ridiculous stuff ever.
Oh, I absolutely love it, man. I absolutely love it. I actually have that astronaut picture tattooed on me.
Are Bray and Matt on the picture?
I wish.
Okay.
So anyway, after that, we see the backstory between why Natalya is teaming with Ronda, because Ronda trains with her and Eve Torres. Right? Isn't that what they're... Isn't it Eve Torres is the other person she's working with?
Yeah, because, you know, Eve is married to Rhaenyra Gracie. So,
right.
Yeah,
I thought that they had mentioned... I know they had mentioned Eve Torres, but I thought that's what they were saying, was that Ronda was working with both of them.
They may have said Eve. I don't remember hearing that, but because I stopped, you know, I'm in and out.
Right, right.
But yeah, but they do. But she has trained with them before, so I'm sure that probably was right.
Gotcha. Did they have a match at this point, or did it go on at a different point? Let me see.
Yeah, right now we're at the six-man tag.
Right now is the six-man tag?
Yes, sir.
Gotcha. Okay, so before the six-man tag, there was a picture on the screen that showed the game WWE Champions actually won a Webby Award. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. Yes, and I've never played it, but I've heard it's really good.
Yeah, so I have never played it either, but shout out to WWE for winning the Webby. Next, we have the six-man tag match. What did you think about the match? It was...
Very fun.
It was what?
Very fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought so, too. The crowd was hot for Sammy. The crowd was hot for KO. It was really cool. Braun ends up winning with the running power slam on KO, right?
And that goes to show you how truly over Braun is, because Braun the finishing sequence was Jinder tried to get Sammy to throw him from one turnbuckle to the other to clothesline Roman, and as Sammy throws him, all of a sudden, like literally from out of the screen, you see Roman coming in Spiro. Sammy throws him out. Then Braun comes in. Sammy goes to attack Braun. He throws Sammy out. Singh brother comes in. I'm sorry. I don't know if that was at the point. But anyway, the last part is Kevin comes in and whatever happens. I don't remember the actual finishing sequence. But he, like you said, he power slams Owens. But mind you, they're in Montreal, which is a few miles away from Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn's hometowns.
Yeah.
And they were treated like kings that night. And when Strowman picked up Owens to slam him, the crowd was like, and they're like, oh, wait, that's Braun. And they started cheering again. So for Braun to get cheered in Montreal by beating up two Montreal kids, Braun's over, dog. Braun's over.
Yeah, it was a fun match, and Braun is over. I really don't even have much to say back to that because it's just, I remember not long ago, I think 2 years ago maybe, Braun, everybody was talking about, oh, Braun might be having a match at WrestleMania with Taker, and I read so much stuff online that was like, dude, Braun's not ready, we don't like Braun, he's not a good worker, he doesn't even talk on the microphone, blah, 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 blah. And just in 2 short years, you know, Braun's one of the most over workers in the business.
Proof that, just give people some time.
Yeah, exactly. Next up, we had Baron Corbin versus No Way Jose. No Way Jose. No Way Jose. Baron comes out first. And he's dogging Titus O'Neil and Jose. Jose comes out next with the is it Congo line, right? And then I always ask you this every episode. I ask you, is it the Congo line?
Yes, it's a Congo line. Yes.
Comes out with the Congo line. Jose ends up, Baron ends up getting distracted. What did he get distracted by?
Titus Worldwide comes out.
Titus Worldwide.
Titus has the. Titus has the. The good old primetime players whistle in his mouth.
Yeah.
So Dana and Apollo run down first. And Graves and Cole, like, what's he doing? And Titus starts to run down and they stop him. They wipe the mat off so he won't fall again. And Titus proceeds to just kind of stroll through like he didn't fall. Then he gets on the apron, dog. Because Corbin's ready to fight him. So he gets on the apron like he's about to get in the ring to fight him. And he slips on the apron. Corbin starts laughing. No Way Jose rolls him up. And then we find out it was just an elaborate ruse to get Corbin beat. It's just ridiculous. And then after No Way Jose wins, did you see how excited Titus was, and he started started screaming for all of the conga line to come around?
Oh yeah.
Just looked like a really, really, really old coach.
Yeah.
Who was happy his team won the game. Yeah.
Oh, it was great.
By the way, can I say something real quick?
Absolutely.
I don't, a lot of the times, I believe in giving things a chance, right? I believe in that. I don't understand why, if you're trying to build Baron Corbin, the slow wolf, as you affectionately call him, you're trying to build this dude up, right?
Right.
I dig what doing with him. I get it. I dig what they're doing with him. You know, you put him against some lesser guys because, he's a bully, and I get that. It's fine. One of the best things about Baron Corbin is his entrance. One of the worst things about Baron Corbin is his mic skills.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you keep having him talk when he comes out instead of letting us see that awesome entrance?
Yeah.
Don't get it. Just let people see that entrance 3 times on Raw. I guarantee people are going to be like, oh, man, he's a big deal.
Yeah. I agree.
I don't get it.
I agree. I love, while we're talking about him, I love that spot he does where he's Irish whipped into the corner and he slides under the bottom rope, goes around the steel post and goes back up and usually clotheslines him.
He's so fast when he does that.
I know, man. For his size, he's freakishly fast. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, granted, it's pretty stupid of the guy to stand there and watch him just slide. But, you know.
Right?
What can you do?
Yeah, what are you going to do, you know? So next up, we had Mickie James versus Natalya with Bliss and Ronda Rousey ringside. You know, they're having the match. And did you notice the first Bliss spot, she hops up on the ring apron, right? And Natalya goes over there and takes a swing at her. And Bliss just ducks down. And as soon as the punch is over, she stands back up. And Natalya doesn't go back after her. She just lets her, just walks away. Like, I didn't understand what was going on there.
Was that right before Ronda chased her around the ring?
Yeah, yeah.
It was probably setting up for Alexa to realize that, oh, Ronda's looking at me.
Yeah.
But yes,
yeah.
It was pretty stupid. But Natty is a terrible face, so...
I know, I don't know why they have her as a face, because I think she's a great heel. I assume she's going to turn on Ronda at some point and go back to being a heel.
That's what it is. It's the only reason she's face is to play up. So this is this is perfect, I think. Number one, I think it's perfect to put Ronda with somebody for her first feud. Of course, Mickey's technically her first feud, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But her first real, real big feud with, number one, somebody she's comfortable with personally. And number two, somebody that is a ring general. And Natty is truly a ring general, right?
Right.
Natty took Charlotte in her, like, sixth match to, like, a four-star match. Like, Natty's a ring general. So I think that's perfect. But to do that, you kind of have to play up the friendship angle between the two, because they are, in real life, friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Natty is considered, like, the honorary member of the Four Horsewomen.
Right.
You know?
Right. No, I didn't know that, but I knew they were close. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're all... She's very close with all four of them.
That's cool.
So it makes sense. Natty is much better as a heel, but playing the face in peril to Big Bad Ronda and then letting it all be a ruse just to get over it. Like, I get it. I think it's going to work out fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Ronda goes to chase in Alexa Bliss around. Doesn't catch her. Natalya rolls up Mickey for the pin, right? And
yes.
As Bliss is up on the entrance ramp, looking back at Mickey, who just lost, Nia Jax's music hits. So Nia Jax chases her down the entrance ramp, and Alexa eventually has to go out into the crowd to get away from everybody.
Yeah, so
I really like what they're doing there. It's like, I put in my notes, I put 2 stars by it, and I put, I'm loving this storyline right now. I just think that when this all blows up and, you know, Natalya turns on Rousey, and then when Nia finally gets her hands on Bliss again, and it's just, I think it's just going to be really cool, man.
It's a very good, think about the so we have, right now, we have 3 major female storylines on Raw.
Yeah, it's true.
Ronda and Natty with Mickey, and whatever Ronda and Natty do, Alexa and Nia, and whatever's happening with them, and then Sasha and Bayley, and whatever's happening with that. Like, it's a really good time right now for women's division, especially on both shows, but on Raw, because they have multiple legit storylines, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I dig it. Next, we see an iPhone promo from Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. Where are they? Because wherever they're...
I'm gonna ask you the same question, dog.
I couldn't figure it out. You know, it looks like, you know, like a storage closet or a storage area. But I'll tell you what, I liked that. Because there are heels that don't like anybody, right? So it shows, it gives me the impression of, hey man, these guys, like, they don't want to dress in the locker room, so they just went and found, like, a room that, you know, the building stores shit in, and they're just getting dressed, just the two of them.
When you say it like that, it makes perfect sense to me. I wasn't thinking about it that way, but yes, nobody likes them. So yeah, and you know, Ziggler's all about that rock star hard rock lifestyle anyway. So
right.
But Drew cut a tremendous promo here.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Even though he didn't really say anything, the way he's like, and at the very beginning of the promo, he says, you know, the reason people believe what I say is because of how I say it. Well, you right, dog, because you ain't say nothing. But it sounded really good.
Yeah, it did. Finally, we're at the main event where Seth Rollins and Finn Balor are facing off for the Intercontinental title.
Oh, by the way, one thing we forgot to mention earlier.
Yep.
Was in the Finn-Seth Mizraj segment, after they fought, Finn hit, Finn snuck on Seth and hit him with the Eye of the Hurricane. So there was some ambiguity into the match. Did Finn turn heel? Does Finn just want the title really, really bad? Is Seth going to be mad? So that was a little extra added in, little thing into this match, because remember, Finn said that in singles matches we're 2-2. I won 2, you won 2. Let's do the rubber match.
Yeah. Still, even after Finn turned on Rollins after their little scuffle earlier in the show, Finn still got an amazing pop from the crowd. They didn't care that he's going to be working this match as a heel or whatnot. They didn't care one bit.
I don't even think he worked it as a heel, bro. I just think it was a guy who just wanted to make a statement.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I seen on Twitter that some people had said they weren't entirely sure if Finn would be a good character as a heel because they like him as a babyface so much.
Those are the best heels.
Yeah, my reply was, dude, this guy started the Bullet Club. Like, he can be a heel. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but does that Japan?
I know, but I mean, if you can... Okay.
You're right. No, you're dead right. You're absolutely right, but it's not Japan.
But didn't you just say that he would be that the best baby face or the best heels make baby face? So you agree he could be a
heel? He definitely can, but the reason I say it's not Japan is because in Japan, all you had to do to be a heel at that time was basically just, it was so much easier to be a heel in Japan than it was Niz in America. Because in America, in Japan, it's more treated like sports. So all you got to do is just not be sporty, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Here, man, you know, like I told you, Kevin and Sammy were the biggest heels on SmackDown for a year and a half. And they literally had to attack a dude who had come back from an injury for 3 years to get heat. No, it's a little different in America. But yes, I think Finn can be a tremendous heel, but I wouldn't cite the Bullet Club as the reason.
Okay. I thought it was a great match.
Tremendous match.
Yeah, it was a great match. The my favorite spot of the match was the was it a superplex?
Oh, when Seth does the superplex into the Falcon Arrow?
Yeah.
But Finn hit him with superplex and then Balor countered and hit him with the Falcon Arrow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was
tremendous.
It was a really cool spot. Seth ends up retaining the title. But overall, great match. What a way to end Raw. And that's all we have for Raw. What did you think of Raw as a whole? What do you grade it? A+, D-, Z?
Oh, can I give it a Z?
If you want to give it a Z, you can give it a Z.
I'm going to give it, because I enjoyed the show from top to bottom. I'm going to give it an A-.
Giving it an A-?
I truly enjoyed everything about the show. It had truly good comedy. It had Elias and Bobby Roode. 4 very, very good entertaining matches. It furthered some storylines. Yeah, I loved it. I loved the show, top to bottom. Yeah. The women weren't only just included, but they were a major part of the show. Yeah, I loved it.
I dig it. I did it as well. And that's it for Raw, man. So, do you have anything else that you want to talk about today before we go?
Actually, yes. I would like to talk about the merits of the ring rope and the turnbuckle.
The what?
Once upon a time, I'm just playing. I don't know. Yeah.
I was like,
no.
I was like, oh man, I didn't research about none of this, man. I'm not gonna have much input.
No, we're good, man. Rob was awesome, man. You know, I do want to. I guess, you know, we could for a minute or so, if you don't mind. I want to ask you a question because I may not post a lot on Twitter, which I'm really trying to get myself to do more, guys. I really am. I'm trying. I have reasons why I stopped posting in the first place, so it's habits got to break. But I always check it, and a lot of people seem to be not upset, but critical of the fact that there are so many tag team matches right now in WWE. And you weren't critical of it, but you even alluded to it earlier when you said that talking about how people have more allies or stables than they've had in WWE in a long time. Number one, I just wanted to address that. If they only had a bunch of one-on-one matches and then half the roster was off of Raw every week, then there'd still be a complaint.
Yeah, I agree.
But then I also want to acknowledge that things are still in flux from the Superstar Shakeup until after this weekend at Backlash, because then it's truly SmackDown on SmackDown, Raw on Raw, because they can't really build matches effectively when Miz is on SmackDown, Seth Rollins is on Raw, or Joe is on SmackDown, Roman's on Raw, stuff like that. But I wanted to ask you, and also one more thing, I found it hypocritical because a lot of those same fans are New Japan advocates, and every major New Japan show has a ton of tag matches. Some shows have nothing but tag matches, maybe like one or two singles. But I want to ask you, do you have a problem with, in this moment right now, with so many tags in WWE?
No, not on free TV, not like Raw and SmackDown and stuff like that, because it helps progress the storyline. I actually prefer them a lot of times because, say, Finn and Rollins are feuding, like they really are, right?
Yeah.
Well, if they have a one-on-one match week in and week out, what are they building to? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're building to yet another one-on-one match that we've already seen 9 times. But if they keep those one-on-one matches to a minimum and it's Rollins and Roman versus Finn and Carl Anderson, yeah, you know, that's something fresh that we don't normally see. And, you know, Finn and Rollins hook up for a minute, but then something gets crisscrossed and they switch off on people and, you know, just stuff like that. I think it's, I think it's really cool to have a lot of tag matches and stuff to progress the storylines.
Do you think it's lazy?
No, I don't think it's lazy at all. Is that what people are saying?
Yeah, some people are saying that it's just lazy because they should have ready-made storylines for everybody and, you know, and just continuing to fall back on tags. Like, for example, what they've done with Braun and Bobby over the past few weeks, they would argue that that's lazy because Braun and Bobby should be in marquee storylines instead of just putting them in a tag every week to get them over. And I mean, Braun definitely should be in a storyline, but he is. Braun and Bobby are fighting. They're fighting Kevin and Sammy at Backlash. So while Braun should be the world champion, in my opinion, right now, you know, I get it, but I don't think it's lazy just because it's different, you know. When you have all the travel that these guys have done this past month, all the shows these guys have done, you know, sometimes it makes more sense to say, oh, hey, run a tag. It's not lazy because it's one thing just to do a tag. The 10-man tag at the end of the Superstar Shakeup, while it was understood, could be considered lazy because they literally just said, put all the heels, all the faces, we'll do the match. I don't think that's lazy, but I can see how you could think that's lazy. What they've done the past 2 weeks isn't, because both of those matches were conduits for storylines.
Right.
I just want to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's lazy. I think it would be lazy if they just had the same match you know, night in and night out, building up to the same match. Yeah. And one other thing, you know, people complaining about Bobby Roode and Braun not being, you know, in the main event storyline or a marquee storyline. I mean, Bobby Lashley, I'm sorry. Man, there's only one main event. You know what I mean? And you can have multiple storylines, but, I mean, Bobby's only been there a couple of weeks. It's hard to get a man ingrained in a solid storyline that people are going to buy into in just a few weeks, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, especially coming back like he has, like, you're still going to have to dedicate months to him getting reacclimated, you know, with the fan base. He's been gone for so long, even though most of us that are big wrestling fans know that he's been out there fighting, you know, MMA and wrestling at Impact and stuff. Like, I mean, you still got to get him acclimated to, you know, the WWE, to a lot of fans, you know what I mean? So, you know, yeah. I think that stuff takes time.
And, you know, we have to remember, this isn't a call-up. This is a re-debut. So you said it perfectly. Not only do fans need to get used to Bobby Lashley again, but I think it's cool that we don't know what Bobby Lashley's intentions are right now, because for all we know, he might turn on everybody.
Yeah, we don't even know for sure if he's going to be a babyface.
Yeah, 100%. Because while he's been babyfacious these past few weeks, it's real. I feel like he's going to turn on Braun, because he's been way too chummy with Braun over the past few weeks.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like he's doing that because he wants to bring the big guy in, so when he turns on him, dude won't see it coming.
Yeah, and what better place to turn on him than when they're in a tag match on Raw? Bada boom!
So, hold on. Okay. So, father, philanthropist, ghostwriter, podcaster,
publicist,
and now sage.
Oh, man. Did you get what commentator? You intern?
Oh, comment. My bad. Commentator. awesome coffee maker. professional vapor.
Dude, I need you to message me all these so I can... I'm going to seriously put them on my my Twitter bio today. All right, man. Well, if you ain't got anything else, then we'll say our goodbyes. And we'll be... Don't forget, everyone, to check out the show. Before I say anything else, we need to make sure that we get everything in. Don't forget to follow Ray on Twitter at It's Ray Cash. Follow the show at World Class Pod. That's World Class P-O-D. Follow myself at Fox the Podcaster. Don't forget, you can now hear our show on thechairshot.com. We are now part of the Chairshot Radio Network. It's a great up-and-coming website. You can get all your wrestling news there. It's a great website. It's a great radio network. And I will put on Twitter later today all of the places that you can now hear the show besides iTunes and Stitcher Radio, because we have gained a lot more avenues that you can listen to the show. So stay tuned for that. And anything else, Ray, that I'm missing, or anything you want to say?
That's it, man. Yeah, chair shot. We moving up to the big leagues now.
Yeah, we're officially in the big leagues.
We got that apartment in the sky of the east side. Well, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, on the Upper East Side. In a deluxe apartment in the sky, moving on up.
I live on the east side of Houston. Technically, there's no deluxe apartments, but yeah.
Dang, I was gonna make a joke, but I said you too many times. I killed it.
Yes, I was willing that joke away. I was willing it away with
my mind. Oh, man. All right, Ray. Well, I appreciate you, man. Like I said, I know we do this every morning at 7:30, and I appreciate you getting up early with me every day, dude. You and I make a wonderful team. We have a wonderful show that we run together here, dude, so I appreciate it. And I will talk to you in just a little bit. And for everyone out there listening, for Mr. Ray Cash and myself, everyone out there, stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling, tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged.
But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do